This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 23rd, 2020. This is episode number 29. Today, we'll be talking about Tesla records a record quarter, the Tesla FSD beta is out, and the GMC Hummer EV Supertruck has been revealed. I'm Dominic Chione, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, longtime EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all your usual podcast platforms. And so welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. So the big product news of the week is the launch of the GMC Hummer EV. Yep, that SUV that was supposed to be revealed in all its Supertruck glory on May the 20th has finally been shown to the world. The actual event, I have to say, was a little anticlimactic. Basically, GM released a 5.5-minute video of a computer-generated truck doing mostly off-road things. The heavy lifting for the truck's debut was actually done by YouTubers, including Jason Fenske from the Engineering Explained channel and John Redinger, among others. They had access to an early prototype, a full-size vehicle that looks pretty much what the production version will look like. However, while it may be functional to some extent, it's not an actual pre-production vehicle because with just more than a little more than a year before first deliveries are slated to begin, they haven't actually gotten to the stage of development yet. So we can talk about why I think that's a good thing a little later. But first, let's get to some specs and get some features out of the way. Okay, so the GMC Hummer EV, or at least the top spec of it, is an all-wheel drive pickup truck with a 5-foot bed, a removable glass roof, a four-wheel steering driven by three motors that makes 1,000 horsepower and about 1,000 pound-feet of motor torque. GM says it makes 11,500 pound-feet of torque, but that's wheel torque, which takes gear ratios and wheel size into account and is kind of misleading because we always look at motor torque when we read about cars. So we'll go with 1,000 pound-feet of torque, which actually Jason Fenske of the Engineering Explained. He got the gear ratios and things from GM and figured it all out, and that's what he came up with. So the Hummer EV can hustle from a standstill to 60 miles an hour in about 3 seconds. It can go over 350 miles on a charge. It can also accept 350 kilowatts of peak current when you're recharging, a DC fast charging. At that rate, which you'll likely only see when you're below a 50% state of charge, it can add about 100 miles of range in 10 minutes, which is pretty good. So the price for the Edition 1, the initial trucks to be built, is $112,595. Ouch. But unless you already put down your $100 deposit, forget about it, because they all sold out within a few minutes. That means you'll only have to pay $99,995 and probably have a choice of colors besides the special white that only the Edition 1 gets. So unfortunately, while you get to save about $13,000, you'll also have to wait an extra year because it's only set to begin deliveries of that lower trim in the fall of 2022. There are also a couple of cheaper trim levels with only two drive motors and fewer features and later delivery dates. The cheapest one will be $79,995, and that will only be available in 2024. So, Tom, why don't you kick things off by talking about why this price isn't bad, even though it's significantly higher than the Rivian R1T and Tesla Cybertruck, which should be its biggest electric pickup truck competitors.
Yeah, so first of all, one of the things that we have to consider is that it's not just going to be competing against electric vehicles. We went over this a little bit with the Volkswagen ID.4, where people were comparing it to Model 3, Mustang Mach-E. And, you know, one of the points that I made was that, you know, this isn't that they're not necessarily its prime competitors. Its prime competitors are the RAV4 EV, the Honda CR-V. It's going to take sales from gasoline competitors more so than it would electric competitors. And I think the Hummer EV is the same in that respect. Yes, there'll be some cross-shopping. There are always cross-shopping between Rivian and Tesla, but this is going to go after a different type of buyer. Now, remember, when the original H1 came out back in, I think it was 95 or 96, it was over $100,000. And GM sold as many of them as they could. They sold a ton of them. It was like proof that people wanted to buy these type of vehicles. So that's why they went and redesigned it and kind of toned it down and used a Tahoe, frame and made the H2, which was not nearly as capable an all-wheel drive vehicle as the H1, but it did cost less. That brought the price down somewhere between $70,000 to $85,000. Most of them sold in that range. So even 20 years ago, this was a $70,000, $80,000 vehicle. So I don't know why people, and it does seem like people are really surprised that the cheapest version is going to be $80,000. That doesn't surprise me at all. I fully expected this to be like GM's electric halo vehicle, this like, you know, brute force, no holds barred, can do anything vehicle, and you pay for that. I mean, it's packed with technology. It's got 1,000 horsepower, 1,000 pound-feet of torque. It's going to be one of the most capable electric vehicle, or probably the most capable all-wheel drive electric vehicle available, and you're going to pay for that. So, I look at what pickup trucks cost these days. Go to a dealership and look at a fully loaded Ford F-150. It's like $75,000. So, right. This vehicle with what it has appears that it's priced right, in my opinion. I think GM's going to do okay with them. This isn't going to be a, 50,000 unit per year vehicle. I think when the all electric Silverado comes out eventually, that's what would be in that, their high volume seller. Right. But, I'm pleased with the vehicle. I think the pricing is appropriate for it. Now, that said, certainly not pleased with how GM rolled this out. Another kind of a launch fail, like the Lyriq was, in my opinion. It really is mind-boggling to me how poorly GM does with these new electric vehicle reveals, almost as if they're really not that interested in getting people excited about them, terrible launch. And then the fact that we've got to wait as long as we do for this. I mean, this vehicle isn't going to be available for a full year. The least expensive vehicle for more than 2.5 years. That's the fail that I see. I think the vehicle is a really cool vehicle. I don't think it's overpriced for what it's going to offer, but the way GM rolled this out and the timing of it, I think, is the really unfortunate part here.
Okay. Well, I was thinking it was going to be in the $100,000 kind of area because it goes 350 miles. So when GM first rolled out its Ultium battery plans, it said it would go up to 200 kilowatt hours. And so I assume it has a 200 kilowatt hour battery, which obviously is not going to be cheap. And so GM is not saying exactly how big the battery is. It is over 200 kilowatt hours, though, just slightly. So doing the math, again, Jason Fenske of Engineering Explained did the math on it, and they figure it's between 202 kilowatt hours and 218.9 kilowatt hours. And look, if you're watching this on YouTube, man, that's a great shot on the beach with the roof off. Man, I'm loving this thing, really. It looks, I find it looks a bit more more athletic than the originals. Hey, Kyle. So Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring YouTube channels and One Lap channel has joined us. And so what do you think of this? I don't think we've spoken about this.
Hello, good morning. Sorry, I am late to the show. I just rolled out of bed. Somehow I must be on Colorado time.
The dog ate my homework. Give a note to the teacher. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, normally my internal clock, I don't even set alarms. I'm up at 6:30, and today, wow, 10 a.m. Sorry, guys. I really apologize. I would guess up late editing. Anyway, Hummer EV, specs look great. I think when I jumped on, Tom was just saying, what is GM doing with these launches? I mean, this is such a fail. We were sitting there watching this live stream and we're so excited, and they play this 5 minute and 30 second like ad basically. And then we're like, okay, great. Now it's going to start and we'll see it on stage and see people stuff. And then it never came. So we're like, come on. Honestly, I don't think the price is too high. I agree with Tom on this. I think it's too high for normal people. But keep in mind who's going to be wanting to buy this car. It's all those big macho CrossFitters that are down in Miami that's angry at the car next to you. And they will spend the money. I mean, these guys are, there's a lot of money in the bank. Look, first editions already sold out pre-orders. So, that just shows they priced it right. GMC has Denali as their premium brand. These trucks are $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 as is, and they sell, tons of them. And then they have AT4, which is their off-roading brand, which is, a little bit lower price point, but very capable trucks. This is sort of a blend of both of those and then higher performance. I think they can justify the $112,000 price. Again, people buy cars not with their brains. They buy them with their hearts. And this is an emotional decision. This is someone who wants to pretend that they're invading a third world country in their giant Humvees. And then, it happens to be electric. So that's my take on it.
And one thing I want to point out, I mentioned two or three of the podcasts ago that I was at doing dealer training at a Jeep dealership. And while I was there, somebody signed the contract and bought a Jeep Cherokee Trackhawk. And I think it was $103,600. So, to Kyle's point, there's people out there with the coin to buy $100,000 vehicles. And, while the Trackhawk is a really cool vehicle, and I know I'm electric vehicle biased, put these two vehicles next to each other and tell me which one you would buy. I don't even think it's close of a decision. So, in that regards, if you have the coin, this is going to be a compelling offering.
It's a monster, man. It's got 35-inch tires on it and optional 37-inch tires.
And it'll do like a 10-second quarter mile probably, like 10 and a half seconds or something.
I think it'll be closer to 11 and a half, maybe.
All right. Well, let's see. I'm exaggerating a little. I know it's 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. So,
I almost said it. The WTF mode. What is it? What is it called? Watts to Freedom mode.
Yeah.
Watts to Freedom. We need to talk about Watts to Freedom.
Okay. Let's talk about Watts to Freedom.
Do you guys know what Watts to Freedom does?
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just explain. So the car normally in your my mode set to the adrenaline setting is 4 seconds, 0 to 60. This is on the edition one. Mm. When you go to WTF mode, which is all what we're going to call it, it lowers the suspension 2 inches, stiffens the dampers, typical launch control stuff, nothing fancy here. But then it vibrates the seats, plays music in the speakers, goes all crazy, lights start flashing, and then you rock it off. And it's like, oh my God, can I just go from light to light really fast without all this drama?
It's a lot of theater.
Sure. Yeah, there's no way to go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds without the drama. And this is all software that they can code in and code out, but there's been no indication. So all you would hear during my week of testing with the Hummer EV is just lots of loud bassy noises and lights flashing pulling out of my driveway every day, because that's how you got to drive.
Right.
I guess that's their version of like how to compete with ludicrous mode. They had to come up with something that was, even wilder. So they couldn't come up with a more wild name. So let's give audible and vibrations and feedback, So I'm surprised it didn't have gimmick. like the I'm surprised that instead of that, Kyle, it didn't have like a loud, gasoline engine, like record like the Corvette sound and pipe right. that in, and right. and that's your watts to freedom. But
That would be really bad.
It's going to be a super fast vehicle. That's my point. Right. I mean, it does everything. It can go anywhere with that air suspension. It's got like whatever 18 inches of clearance or something right. crazy. It's got that really cool. I love the camera system is what I love. I love the fact that there's cameras under the vehicle. So you can kind of like watch the possum as you run it over, going over rivers and stuff, but I mean, I'm sure it's for clearance and all, but, right. and I'm not advocating running over animals. I meant going over, like it was already dead on the road. It was roadkill and you rode over it.
Do you know anything more about the cameras? Like, I heard it has like 18 different views.
18 cameras, including the two underneath that have little special squirter jets, because of course they're always going to be dirty. And they said, we've thought of that. You'll have some little squirty. I'm surprised they haven't put, they've got three windshield wipers. They should have a couple of little wipers on the cameras as well. Little to keep
Three windshield wipers. I don't
even get
that.
This is nothing new. They've had this little high pressure water squirter at cameras, like on the back of the Chevy Bolt, all of the ones with the camera rear view mirror. Yeah. Since I joined a little late, I just wanted to make sure we talked about Crab Walk.
I just want to mention one thing first, more about the cameras. So I just wanted to add that there's a couple on the bottom sides of the mirrors. So I guess you see if you're on a trail, you can kind of see what kind of clearance you have if you're going by like a stump or something. That's kind of cool. And there's one that's on the bed of the truck, so you can watch whatever you have in the back. I don't know if people carry their dogs in the back down where you all live, but it happens here. I'm not even sure if it's legal.
Yeah, thankfully it doesn't happen here.
Yeah. But if you have a load in the back, you can kind of keep an eye on that. And so that's kind of cool. So Kyle.
The cameras are cool. It's very similar to, I think, their other pickup truck range of cameras. And also like a Range Rover has all this stuff. I didn't see anything with wade depth sensing, so I imagine it doesn't have that. But I always thought that was a great feature in, sort of these premium off-roading segment like a Range Rover, where it tells you how deep the water is that you're fording, or how deep the water is in the Starbucks drive-through, more accurately.
More importantly.
Anyway, the crab walk mode. This is pretty cool. So it can go diagonal, which we had suspected from, I think we originally were hoping it would go full sideways.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's just utilizing that rear wheel steer system up to 10 degrees of angle to crab sideways. And I've already committed, and I promise to do this, I will spend a whole day only getting around in crab mode.
Just zigzagging down the street.
Yes, it will cause traffic jams. Sorry, officer, the car is broken. I'm just going to be driving around only in crab mode. It's going to be a video on the Inside EV's YouTube channel. It's going to cause a whole bunch of, traffic situation, but it'll be worth it.
But you can also change the direction of those back wheels, I guess, I believe at lower speed. So you can also make a super tight turning radius. Super tight for a huge vehicle like this.
Yeah, that will happen automatically. So this is a technology that GM had, I think, 20 or 25 years ago called Quadrasteer. Maybe it wasn't that long, but And those trucks are still very sought after. And there's such a huge benefit to having rear wheel steering. I mean, most modern luxury cars have it now, a 7 Series, an S Class, even Porsche GT3s have passive rear wheel steer in some case. It just transforms the way and what you can do with a car.
Yeah, with that, and also it has torque vectoring on the rear axle, so the handling should be pretty interesting, actually. Yeah, they spend the development time on it. Just one more thing about the W2F watts to freedom mode. It also gives more. It turns the fans or the circulation up of the coolant, so it gives you more cooling going on as well. It kind of prepares the vehicle for that. Can we talk about the interior just for a sec? Because I kind of love this part about it. It's like, if you look at some of the shots of the interior, it's kind of like chunky, hunky. But if you look close, it's got this like moon theme. And you can tell it's like the regolith kind of color gray. It's kind of It's not the most exciting color exactly, but like the speaker grills has like the Sea of Tranquility where you know they landed on the moon. It's got like this weird pattern showing it, and it's got a few kind of the dead pedal has like a astronaut boot print. Yeah, there's a Sea of Tranquility if you're watching this on YouTube. Yeah, it's just kind of bizarre. Man, that looks cool. Yeah, anyone have any thoughts about the interior?
It's pretty industrial. I mean, we don't really have trucks like this over here, so I'm still bemused in a kind of happy daze of just why make this car? But that's a cultural difference. That's fine. Sure. So
I don't think it's a cultural difference, Martin. I'm in full agreement with you.
Like, why would anyone need this? Yeah, inside, I'll be fair and call it industrial. I mean, it's not been beaten with the ugly stick. I'm sure we had a picture up here a minute ago. But, I mean, things like the vents and just like it, like they've just gone at it with a ruler and gone, big rectangle, that'll do. That's right. The air vent. Like, that's right. The style. I get it. I'm tongue in cheek. I get it. I get the car's meant to look like this. It's right. Just, there's just so much room to do. So like, how big should we make the vents? Well, how big do you want them? Like, you know, how big should the center console be? Well, we could put a third seat in there, but how big? Now, why, that's a legacy thing. Why is that? Because the original Humvee had like a transmission there. Like, that's a hangover from the original car, the original military vehicle. But surely that was there for a reason. Like, that must have been some...
I think it's there just for a sense of normality for most of these people. You know, you get into a bench truck, and typically this feels unpremium to us.
Okay.
Center console to Americans is a premium. Or, you know, you look at F-150, you pay for the option of the center console, even though you don't need it. But, you know, the shifter is very legacy of Hummer H2. This was like a Chevrolet Tahoe, but just really chunky. And everything was big, and you needed two hands to move the shifter, and like, you know, it was just everything was just like Tonka toy. And yeah, I think they kept a little bit of that same approach here, but it's also more refined than H2 or H3. So I think they, on paper, have accomplished a good job with the interior, but in reality, you don't sit on paper, you sit in an interior that looks like this, and it just looks like things are going to impale you everywhere.
It's huge. And also so much of it is at the moment on paper. So the specs, so many of the specs are incredible. So the 0-60 time, I understand how they could engineer it. The 800 volt system, I understand how it's engineered. The 350 kilowatt charging, I understand how it's engineered. But you have to put all those together in one package and get it on sale next year. And that's a big question mark in terms of what, as you say, normally at a car launch, it's then... And here's the vehicle. And now you can have a poke around and a look around. And then to find out a day or two later, well, one doesn't exist. A pusher exists. But a lot of these pictures that we've been looking at, if you're watching the YouTube version of the podcast, are renders. I mean, fair play to their art department because it looks amazing. I didn't realize that till I read the article on Inside EVs 36 hours later that they were like, okay, we haven't built one yet, but, you know, we will. You're like, oh my goodness. Like, this is, and that's, I think that's the frustration for me with these big, big companies that have got decades of experience of assembling.
Right.
So they're very, very, very good at putting things together, consumer products together. This is not new for them. This is not hard. Like, I get putting it all together in one piece and getting it to market is a challenge, but it's not like they're having to redesign how to make a car, right?
Right.
It's like, even if they made one that only had a 50 kilowatt hour pack, but it was at least a runner that the media could have, got in and
I think they have.
They do have a runner.
Oh, it is a runner.
There is a runner.
Oh, apologies.
Yes.
I thought I read that they hadn't actually made a runner yet.
What?
Like, this photo is of a real car or a real thing. This one's not CGI that we're looking at here.
I mean, I think it does. I don't know if it has full functionality. I don't know, you know, if it all works like it's going to in the end. It's really it's a prototype. But I think on John Redinger's video, he does show GM sent him B-roll of someone actually driving it. So you could see there's a real human.
Good.
and it's actual drives. But yeah, it's a prototype. It's not like a working pre-production, you know, kind of thing. And as I said earlier, I'll talk about why I think that's a good thing if you want to hear that.
Why? Tell us why.
Okay. So the development process for the Hummer has been shortened. I think probably a lot of that has to do with COVID. And then just, you know, I'm not sure how long the whole development process. I mean, did someone just wake up and say, okay, we're doing this? But anyway, and I'm not sure the actual numbers, but it's definitely a lot shorter. This time we should be seeing, you know, pre-production vehicles, especially at the official reveal that's been delayed for like 6 months or so. So as I said earlier, they don't have any production intent trucks built just a year or so before deliveries. So they do have the powertrain in mules, and they've done extensive testing of the battery systems. They have like a huge battery lab where they do all kinds of incredible amounts of testing. They're very sophisticated. I've walked through it. It's amazing. And they've also done a lot of development engineering and analysis with computer simulations. Now, this is a good thing because if they learn from this and they use the same approach with other future products, it's going to save them a lot of time and money and just in product development in general. So this could really unlock, you know, a lot of like future profit or savings, however they want to, you know, make that calculation in the future. If they actually can do it, you know, they've set the target. They have to deliver, I think, before the end of next year is really what they want to do. And so we'll see if they can do that and then apply these same lessons to all the other electric vehicles, the Cadillac Lyriq. And I mean, they're going to have electric vehicles in all the, you know, in Buicks and, you know, all the other Cadillacs and stuff. So that's my take.
I have one point to bring up. What is up with this 400 to 800 volt switching? Have you spoken about this yet? Because I have two thoughts I want to share.
A little bit, but go ahead.
Okay, so the battery pack when you drive is a normal 400 volt system architecture. It then switches from parallel to series and goes to 800 volts. Could be the other way around. I always get those confused. But it only does this when charging. And it makes tons of sense. You want the highest voltage possible while charging because, you know, to get 350 kilowatt out of these stations is only possible at 800 or higher volts because they can only dump a certain amount of current in. And it doesn't matter what the voltage is to match that current for DC chargers typically. And so that seems pretty cool. You drive around a 400 volt system architecture, you stop, you plug it in, ka-ching, some stuff moves in the battery. It's a mechanical connection, keep in mind, that changes and it ups to 800 volts. But I was pretty excited about that. And then 5 seconds later, I thought about it. I'm like, why isn't it just 800 volts all the time? So I asked GM engineers this yesterday and I said, why don't you just leave it at 800 volts? You get better efficiency all around. They said, well, you know, components are easier to integrate at 400 volt and we're plenty efficient at 400. And that's probably true that they are plenty efficient at 400 volt system architecture. But what it really means is they didn't want to spend the money to engineer an 800 volt architecture for the rest of the car. Sure. They just wanted it for the charging. So it's a blend of cost savings with added complexity to switch your battery pack voltage to make it 800 volts. Personally, I wish they took the Taycan and the Lucid approach and designed it as a higher voltage system, but it's an ingenious way to get around that plan and still get really fast charging. So it's the only 400 volt system architecture that can theoretically charge at 350 kilowatts because it's the first one I've ever heard of that switches.
Right.
I remember talking to the Porsche engineers and about this exact same thing. And they were so proud that of what they had accomplished. And, you know, they said, listen, you know, we had to engineer ourselves all of these components. Like, we're not used to that. You know, we can do it, but we're not used to that. We go to suppliers. There were no suppliers making any of this stuff. We had to engineer all of the components to work in this, you know, high voltage battery system. So they were really proud about that. The Porsche guys that I spoke with back when we did the media drive last year.
Well, it's the same same reason Rivian's at 400 volts and everyone else. You can only typically buy components rated up to 600 volts, and you need that 20% buffer. And off-the-shelf components, they're just not there from tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 suppliers. to handle that level of voltage?
My guess is that they will be available soon, because now the suppliers are saying, okay, there's going to be a market for this stuff. They're probably all in development now. And I bet within a couple of years, you'll be able to get anything you need for, you know, 800 or 900 volt battery systems. And that will make it much easier for the manufacturers to put these systems in place.
100%. And I think by 2025, 350 kilowatts will probably be the de facto standard, I think. 5 years, you think?
Well, let's hope so. Wow. Okay.
Depends on the battery pack size. You know, I think we'll see a shift at some point to smaller batteries, but those don't need 350 kilowatt charging. I think 150 is the minimum livable charge rate for most people.
Yeah.
I think you really don't need any more than a 150. Even like in an efficient vehicle, like an ID4 that can do 125, for example, that's not bad.
Okay. So is there anything else? There's just a couple more things about the Hummer I wanted to hit on real quick. I'm not sure if anyone else has sent something, so let me just run through these real quick. So it also has extract mode, which gives you 6 inches of additional lift for a total of 15.9 inches. The suspension will lift up. It's got adaptive air suspension. It's coming with the next generation of Super Cruise. That's the which is like a autopilot, I guess, basically. With, you know, differences, but and let's see what else. Oh, it has a one pedal driving, and it has regen paddles on, like the Chevy Bolt, on the steering wheel, so you can use the paddles to get extra regen. And yeah, that's about it for me. Anyone else? No? Okay. So Tesla made history this week. It declared a profit for the third quarter of 2020. And using the generally accepted accounting principles, or GAAP, its net profit was $331 million. And that's its fifth profitable quarter in a row. And it was built on a record revenue of $8.7 billion. And that came from the sale of vehicles. It delivered 139,300 cars and produced 145,036 vehicles between July and September. And both of those figures are a new all-time record for Tesla. As usual, critics are saying it was only profitable because of the revenue from sales of regulatory credits. That totaled $397 million this quarter, down from $428 million last quarter. Now, if Tesla wanted to declare a quarterly profit and didn't have any credits, it could have just slowed some of its spending on expanding production capacity, of course, service centers and supercharging stations. This quarter alone, it spent $2.4 billion on you know, capital expenditures. And so, you know, it could easily take some of that. And as well, while we're talking about expenses, it also forked out over $543 in stock-based compensations, or SBCs, the lion's share of which went to CEO Elon Musk, who hit the necessary award milestone, so unlocked that cash. And I did see some regulatory filings. It looked like some other high-level executives had some pretty big paydays as far as, you know, getting unlocking those stock-based compensations. So, Martin, so is this a great result, or is this a great result?
One of the things that I liked in Elon's opening statement was he talked about the scale of the business and what that allows them to do with the feedback loops. And he compared them to Google. You know, every search you make on Google, of the billions of searches that happen all the time, is that if they serve a result that you want at the top and you click on that link, that's a, you know, positive affirmation that that they served you a good result. And he compared them to Google. And of course, there is a fleet of a million cars on the road, not all of them with full self-driving, of course, but all of them sending data back to the mothership. And, you know, apart from obviously that if Google serves you a terrible search result and you click the back button, whereas if Tesla goes wrong, you know, you hit somebody while driving down the road, the stakes are higher. But he was still making the point that they have this big fleet. And that's what I loved about so that in that opening statement about the million cars providing a feedback loop, to me, set the tone of the shareholder letter and the call afterwards as well, which was, you know, for me, guys, having sat with it, I think there's a maturity of the company now. Five profitable quarters in a row. But also, if I take away those things that they talked about with the So the new cells, the 4680 form factor cells, which are being made on a pilot line, which is still going to be one of the 10 biggest cell manufacturing facilities in the world, that's going to end up making 10 gigawatt hours of production, annualized production a year, this time next year, when they're up to getting the yield right. And, you know, there's only so many batteries that you can take away and siphon off for semi-truck prototypes being built at Fremont. So they confirmed that the cells that are being made in California will be shipped to Berlin for the first Model Y. So we now know confirmation, and we'd kind of had half confirmation already, but we know more details, that those first Model Ys, which will be entirely different under the hood, you know, they'll look the same, but they'll be made entirely differently, and will be using the new structural battery, the new giant casting machines for the one-piece front end and rear end. And that sort of ties into something that I noticed last night. The Twitter user Green the Only was saying that code has showed up in the Model Y for the HEPA filter bioweapon defense mode, which Elon said would never come because there's no room. And all of a sudden you think, well, actually, how have they made room in the Model Y? Well, they've redesigned the car. That they've redesigned the whole front end, single cast piece. So these HEPA filters are about 10 times the size of a regular car filter, and there's room in the S and the X to put them in. And you think, well, okay, that is another sign that it's going to be a wildly different car than the one they're making at the moment in the US and China. And but Elon's saying those cells will be shipped from California to Berlin for the first Model Ys, but don't expect what he called volume production until 2022. Whereas we go back a little bit, and the company, when they were scaling up Model 3, it really was make or break. You know, it wasn't quite back in the early days of the company when they were, you know, struggling to make payroll by the end of the week and Elon putting all of his own personal money in. But certainly Model 3 was make or break. It seems now they got $15 billion of cash and equivalents in the bank. They're fine. They're not going anywhere. And it seems to me that they've just allowed themselves to kind of mature in this wonderful way, rather than saying, we've got to get Model Ys out the door in Berlin as quick as possible. And if it's got, you know, we'll get them out. Now they're saying, well, look, production will start next summer, but they'll just be the first vehicles. And volume is 2022. And that's very unlike all the things that we've heard before. And so it's nice. They've set the expectations very low. I think they will exceed them, is my personal opinion. I don't think we'll wait that long for it. But that was kind of my overall takeaway, having sat and thought about it. And, you know, they're spending, this quarter, they spent $1 billion on capital expenditure, which, you know, if you do that over four quarters, that's $4 billion a year on CapEx. They could easily do 5 to 8, and they would still be massively profitable. The margins are very big. The annual capacity they confirmed, and remember, capacity is not production, but annual capacity of 3 and Y in Fremont alone is now 500,000, because they've opened up the second paint shop. In Shanghai, it's now 250,000, and that's 3 only, not Y. Y will be online at the end of the year. So they weren't bullish, but they were like, you know, if we can do 180,000 cars, which would be a massive record this quarter, we'll hit 500,000 this year. And then when one of the analysts asked Elon, you know, could it be between 840 and 1 million next year? What was the phrase he used? Not ballpark, not vicinity, but he used a phrase like that. And
okay, in the neighborhood?
Like, something like that. And you're like, whoa, okay. So all of a sudden, it's in my notes somewhere here, but all of a sudden, you're like, well, here's a company that could make 500,000 cars this year. And I've just been talking about them, you know, maturing. And yet, what mature company does 100% growth rate year on year? Next year could be 1 million cars. So really, really positive. Just absolutely pumped that they are showing, they are proving the case that EVs are a good business decision to do. And, you know, there's the side argument of winners and losers and how much of the market share will Tesla capture and the others and catching up and all that kind of stuff. Bum, 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 bum. That will all shake out in the fullness of time. I'm excited because it showed, actually, they're making a really strong business out of making electric vehicles. And they're not even an EV maker. Like, that's not even their purpose. Like, they're not even a car company.
I mean, if you look at the energy side, like you said, they're not just a car company. They sell energy storage. And so their total battery energy storage power all power packs and mega packs delivered in the quarter increased to 759 megawatt hours in the third quarter. That's up 59% over last year's third quarter, which, yeah, you know, it's all of these. The profit margin is a little lower on this. I think it's closer to like 9% or something. I think I saw the number. We have the article up there on Inside EVs. But yeah, that's the other big piece of the puzzle.
And the margins growing on something like insurance will be, because they elaborated on the insurance project, and they said that all of the enterprise software that Tesla uses, they write themselves. Like, this is not a car company. This is a Silicon Valley technology company that ships updates weekly. They're never done. And, you know, I think about so many other products that are done. They're finished. They're shipped. And then maybe they get a mid-cycle refresh. Tesla operate like, in fact, Elon said, we think of ourselves as 12 plus small startups, like all the product lines. So S3 sexy cars, so S3 XYC, not the ATV, but R and the S. Like that's seven. Then you've got Fremont, Nevada, Berlin, Shanghai. People forget about Buffalo, Austin. So that's 13 or 14 already. And then you add in insurance, autonomy. They make their own chips. They make their own silicon. They write all their own software. This is not a normal car company. This is some insane stuff they're doing. But coming back to insurance, because they write all of their own stuff, Elon was saying that the margins on the insurance are crazy because they write all their own software, they assess all their own risk, and they can provide a package of insurance which they want to roll out to everyone, which is cheaper than anyone else can provide and a better level of coverage because they know everything about every steering input, every pedal movement that you do is logged in the mothership. And for good or bad, you know, for good or bad, they can assess what kind of driver you are and what your policy will cost. And he's saying that alone could be 40% of the entire automotive business very soon. So yeah, wow. Super, super pumped for it. Without getting, you know, carried away. Cybertruck was definitely played down. He said, I mean, he was in the design studio with Franz last Friday, he said, and we've made a load of small tweaks, and the Cybertruck you see will be very different to the one that we unveiled. Didn't elaborate on that, but he did say that, you know, don't expect it anytime soon. They're working on it. Didn't really address any of the recent upgrades to the cars or even the price drops, but, you know, there was one omission, no mention of the Roadster, either in the call or the letter. Will it ever arrive? It doesn't really matter, does it? Because it won't add anything to the bottom line. Just a bunch of YouTubers who won't get their free car, but they'll be very upset. Will it ever arrive? You know, they were going to make it as the hardcore smackdown to all other combustion cars, but you know, maybe the Model S Plaid does that. So who knows?
No, it's going to be in, it's Fremont, I guess, right? It's for the Roadster. That's where it's supposed to be built.
When it comes, there was zero mention of it. And by the way, there doesn't need to be. They can get on and quietly work on it, and good luck there. One day, and it'll be amazing, be wonderful. They also talked about charging of commercial vehicles, and they said that they were working with partners on defining a standard. That to me sounds like the Charin. European thing? But I mean, everyone's in that. A group of Ford, GM, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, Tesla, ABB, everyone around that space as well. And so they'll be defining a standard for, you know, 1 megawatt plus charging for commercial vehicles. So they alluded to that and said that we are working with partners on a standard, and that's coming nicely. So
that'd be great to have a good standard in that power range. Oh God.
It was just some good stuff. There was nothing announced. There was nothing that made any mega headlines, but all very, very solid stuff that should remind, you know, the rest of the car industry that this is the trajectory. And if you want to come along for the ride, you can make money doing this. This is a good business to be in.
Wow, Martin, that's a pretty good summation of everything. Anyone have anything else?
Well, the only thing I'll add to it is I want to see Kyle's insurance estimate from Tesla based on driving patterns.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
You have to apply for that when it's available. Yes, and let them rate you.
That's probably not a bad idea.
That would be awesome.
What's funny? I don't drive fast on the street, but I will say Geico is so inexpensive to insure my Tesla. My smart car costs more to insure than my Tesla. Don't ask me why, but it is true.
And I will add, when Kyle and I drove from New Jersey to North Carolina in two different cars, when we got to North Carolina, he did make some kind of a comment like, "You're definitely from New Jersey because you."
Because Tom just freaking rips it wherever it's like car, and then I just see this little Mini Cooper SE just rocket off like in traffic. I'm like, "Damn, this guy's in a hurry."
The last thing that I would like to just add to this is swinging back to the very beginning when we're talking about Tesla only being profitable because of their regulatory credits. Okay. Get over it, who's ever beating those drums, because it's profit is profit. It's part of it's revenue that they get, and it's part of the business. Tesla's been, it's amazing that they're strung 5 quarters together in a row now of profitability. It's not amazing because they just keep selling more cars. But the amazing part is, look at what they're doing right now with building factories all over the world, expanding the supercharger network. They're not letting anyone like Electrify America or Ionity or anybody even get close to them. So, you know, the amount of investment that they're making, they're still in that growth phase. It's ridiculous that they've been profitable now 5 quarters in a row. It's just amazing. And you know what? The regulatory credits are there. Anybody can get those. Any company out there that wants to make a ton of zero emission vehicles could get that revenue. It just so happens that Tesla is the one that's raking in most of the money from that. So, kudos to Tesla. This is a great accomplishment, stringing five consecutive quarters in a row of profitability.
Yeah. It's 146 new stations with 1,337 connectors in the last 3 months that were added to the supercharge network.
And to that point now, we talk a lot about Electrify America. Kyle and I cover Electrify America a lot. We've given them a lot of credit for how they've expanded so much recently. I mean, the last announcement that Electrify America had a few months back was that they now have 400 charging stations with something like 1,500 or 1,600 connectors. Tesla has now almost 20,000 connectors. So they're literally have 10 times the amount of physical plugs than Electrify America does. And, you know, we can't discount that Tesla hasn't let their foot off the accelerator. They are just continuing to install these worldwide at a breakneck pace. So, I mean, you know, you've got to give them credit for this. And it's such an integral part of Tesla's business plan. You know, it's, you know, the fact that they're selling so many cars and installing so many supercharger stations isn't mutually exclusive. You know, it's why they're selling so many cars. Every time a new car comes out, like the Lucid, we didn't really talk about charging too much with the Hummer EV, but everybody says, "Oh, you know, the Lucid charges at 350 kilowatt. It's amazing." Then what do you get in the comments? Yeah, but there's nowhere to charge it. You know, so like, and it's true to an extent that the DC fast charge infrastructure is expanding compared to what it was 4 or 5 years ago, but it's still, there's nothing like the charging experience of owning a Tesla. It is, you can't even compare it at this point.
Right. All right. So are we ready to move on? We've got we're just about 10 minutes or so before our time's up. We might go a little over, who knows. So there's another big headline this week. Tesla has released a new full self-driving beta to a select handful of owners. We're not sure exactly, supposedly to, you know, careful drivers, but there's a couple higher profile, at least one higher profile account that has it. And we've already seen videos out there, you know, showing it off. So despite its name, full self-driving, no one should be under the illusion that it's actually full self-driving. It still requires the drivers be paying attention and keeping their hands on the wheel. The first videos of the system in action are already out, and it looks pretty promising. For these first beta testers, the screen animation shows kind of things, kind of how the computer sees them. and it'll look more normal, I think, once it's rolled out to everybody else. And if we, I don't know if we have one there, Martin, that we can show people, but so now with FSD activated, you have like the smart cruise control and auto steer like before. It can read speed limit signs better and stop signs and red lights. So the big improvement, you know, the big improvement is that it can actually make left or right turns now through intersections by itself. And this morning I even saw there's a video out of it going through a roundabout. So that's pretty cool. So once Tesla decides FSD is actually up for the challenge, it will be rolled out to other owners who have paid for the privilege, maybe even before the end of the year. So that's pretty neat. And speaking of paying, Elon announced on Twitter that the price of FSD is going up again by $2,000 to $10,000 for this. And that's to happen on Thursday of next week. It was originally Monday. You got some pushback. And countries outside of the U.S., it will come out. The price raise will happen after beta is rolled out in those other regions.
That's worth saying that we don't have a version of full self-driving like you do anywhere near.
Right. And so, yeah, so the price will stay, I guess, what it is now and then increase once its capability increases. Yes. And here's something new, too, that we just suggested last week and maybe prior to. I think we've talked about this, but a monthly full self-driving rental will be available to owners sometime next year. So, Kyle, you do a lot of long distance driving and don't have FSD. Will you be renting it next week or next year?
It's possible. Look, I think autopilot for my use case, which is just sitting on the highway and eating, 5,000 miles in a week, that is, it already does a really good job of that. Really, the only thing I want is lane changes out of this. Now, thankfully, we still have a car in our family with FSD. That's probably the car that we'll use in the future if we do any more of these long distance trips. But my personal car does not. This is a really interesting upgrade. I am, first off, very excited that we're seeing more of the capability of autopilot. And I put a poll out on Twitter, and it was pretty controversial yesterday, about do you feel that it is safe that Tesla tests its systems, 100% testing, on general average consumers? We got an 80% yes. Most of my followers that I'm in contact with are very Tesla loyal, and 20% no. And I don't even have sort of a solid opinion here. I was just curious what everyone thought. But I will bring up two things. One, on the side of that, yes, this is safe. Many people feel that you need this system to be put in the real world with real users, and that's the only way it's going to learn and get better for this type of system. The other side, the unsafe side of this, which I tend to lean a little bit more to, and I'll explain why in a second, is I believe, and many others, that this is testing premature technology on users that are untrained in how the system works. For the people that have the initial rollout, they're probably super into Tesla. They're keeping their hands on the wheel. They know when to take over. But maybe that's only exciting for the first 10 or 11 hours of driving. And then you're like, oh, the car's got it. And then what happens when the car doesn't have it? And certainly humans mess up too. I'm not trying to say that, we need to wait until this technology is perfect. But I think there needs to be some more clear communication from Tesla to the users of the system of the true limitations of the system. Does it have trouble seeing in the dark and fog and recognizing a pedestrian? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't have an issue, but I feel like two lines of text saying you're required to pay attention is not enough to safely roll out this level of capability in such an early stage. I mean, Tesla is saying this is early release and we're testing it on the general public. So while I think it's very cool, exciting technology, it seems to do a really good job of making left turns, right turns, handling tight scenarios. I actually haven't seen a scenario that it has not handled yet. It's been very impressive. I just think I wish I would see a little bit more customer education on the system, especially for those who are testing it out for the first time.
Yeah, they still have the disclaimer. So if you are in the beta program and you activate it, you still get the disclaimer come up on screen, which says, or rather the instruction, which is, you know, you've signed an agreement to not discuss these things. You're part of a program. But then they've added a line at the bottom of it. You're welcome to talk about this on social media. And it's that one addition and I'm like, okay. Like, again, this is a safety. This is the ultimate. This is not about a wrong click on Google. This is about running someone over. And I don't know if like the point of this is meant to be that Twitter owned the Tesla owned Twitter this week. Like, the point of this is getting it right and being an amazing technology, not about make sure you tweet about it, guys. Cars. Like, that was. That was an interesting line to add in, and I don't know how much or not to read into it, but I'm like, I read that and was like, oh, asking people to tweet about it? Oh, okay. Like, this is a safety thing.
It's how they're doing this rollout. And again, don't get me wrong. I love the technology. I can't wait to spend some more time with it and figure out its intricacies and watch the system expand and mature over time. But yeah, Martin, it just seems like they're really, we haven't heard much of a true focus on safety with this type of technology from Tesla. Also, it still really bugs me that they call it FSD. It's not FSD. The car still needs a human there to be engaged 100% of the time. And people are like, oh, FSD is here. I'm like, no, it's not full self-driving. It's really amazing driver assistance, but it's not driving right. itself. Because it's not safe without you in the car. Therefore, it cannot be driving itself without a human paying attention. And it's going to be quite some time until the cars can drive themselves with humans not paying attention and then with no humans at all. So, it's going to be quite an interesting time.
Do we know how many people receive this?
No,
we don't even have an idea. Like, is it 20?
I think it's pretty small.
Is it 10? Is it, you know? So
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no. It'll be interesting to see how that gets expanded. And what the timeline of expanding that is. If, like, let's say in 30 days there's no incidents, you know, which I'm sure they're really hoping that there's not an incident. There's going to be an incident sooner or later. Let's face it. I mean, somebody is going to, there's so many instances where things are just unpredictable and it's obviously not ready. You know, it's not polished and done, or they would have just been a full release. So I wonder if Tesla has, like, I'm sure they do, some sort of plan where, okay, if in 30 days we've logged, 100,000 miles on these 10 cars that are out there or whatever, and there's no instances, then we'll give it to 50 more people or something like that. I just wish that Tesla would communicate what the plan was. You know, they wouldn't, because God forbid, like, the first day this gets released, there's a problem, then, you know, it would get completely pulled back. And I hope that nobody gets hurt. It's just inevitable. There's going to be an incident. Hopefully it's a minor incident where a car just, brushes into another vehicle or a garbage can or whatever, something, an obstruction in the road that it doesn't see. And it's not a person, but we're going to be talking about this on the podcast at some point. Unless Tesla for some reason ends it, because it's inevitable. I just hope somebody doesn't get, hurt yet. I'm kind of torn both ways. I do believe that this the only way that this is going to advance quickly is doing something like this. But I also understand that it should have been, in my opinion, the small group of people that are using it should have not just been, Tesla vloggers. Should have been, 40 or 50 people that are, trained to do this, or you should have had to go and do a week-long course with Tesla or something where they explain everything to you, show you in and out, not just like, here you go, guys, have at it, unless it's much better than we believe, and that it's much more further advanced than I think we're kind of thinking it is at this point. But, this is something that we're definitely going to have to keep a close eye on, because this is going to be an ongoing story for us.
Yeah, my concern is on the regulatory issues around it as well, because as I mentioned, it's hobbled here. So it's sort of in three tranches, really. The first is all the basic safety stuff that comes with Tesla, which is just, you know, standard on a premium car. It's not on many cars now. Then you've got what they call autopilot, similar language to what you have, and I think it might even be the same specs. So it's basically cruise. So adjusted cruise control and lane keep assist, which again, most good cars have, premium cars have. And that's probably some of the best in the business in terms of the lane keep is awesome. And then over here, full self-drive, which over $6,000, you can't use smart summon. You have to be within 6 meters, 10 feet of your car to use summon, which is kind of pointless unless, you know, it's in a deep puddle, unless you're less able-bodied. I'm not saying it hasn't got uses. It's not worth $6,000. And I'll navigate on autopilot. It won't do anything but ask you to confirm it on the indicator. So it'll change lanes if you tell it to change lanes. But that's a very different product to what is about to cost $10,000 where you are. That's because over here and in Europe, there is a big conversation going on with in and around the regulators of this, and there are many, many voices offering caution, which is good. And there's no doubt that Tesla, as a leader in terms of the amount of publicity and PR that they can garner for themselves, could influence the conversation if it goes wrong. And so, again, I'm kind of on the side, as Kyle says, let's proceed with caution and make sure that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot here, and then someone sees a terrible incident or something, and then regulators over here are like, okay, let's slow this down for a couple of years and we'll look into it, we'll do some tests, because that would be a real shame to keep what is very good safety technology away from people.
Yeah, right. Because at the end of the day, it comes down to customer education and communication from the company. I'm not saying that this system would be safe or unsafe in and of itself. I'm not judging its capability. I'm judging the drivers of the system's wherewithal, paying attention, you know, just being involved enough to take over in time to avoid a potential accident that the system has set itself up for. You know, many times I'm driving in poor weather, icy, snowy, rain, whatever it is, and the system just shuts off because it can't see. I don't know if there's a software way around blinding the cameras. So, you know, I this is something where the car is physically blinded by ice and snow. You just need the biggest problem here is not the system. It's not the rollout. It's not the capability of what autopilot can do. It's not the cars. It is purely the person behind the wheel understanding truly how to take over in a situation. Because if you're texting and not paying attention, which is so easy to do, and you look up in a split second, the car's beeping at you saying, I'm driving off the road, please help me. You know, do you have that bandwidth to assess the situation and accurately correct the car's path without overcorrecting, by the way, right, in like a split second time? So this is where we're at right now. We're going to go through this stage. We're going to have to go through this stage. But Tesla could do a lot more to make it a better transition for drivers.
Yeah, communication is not the Tesla's strong point, I don't think. But to some of your points, so this is being rolled to the beta testers now, but Tesla itself has its own, you know, employees testing this for months. They've been driving this, so they have some idea of its capability, really. And it's always learning and improving, and it will continue. They have a, you know, what they call, was it Dojo, like machine learning to teach FSD things, and that hasn't even come online. So it's going to improve incrementally over time. It's going to always get better. And we have seen, actually, it will stop now for pedestrians. There's an example of it online. You can see it stops, you know, dead stop, and in plenty of, like, a lot of time, almost embarrassingly a lot of time. And but that'll be all refined. I'm really kind of curious as to how many people think it's worth $10,000. I mean, that's, to me, is like, it's a non-starter. I'm not paying $10,000 so somebody else can drive my car. You know, even if I wanted to use it as a self-driving taxi, I mean, this is just a lot of money. When competition comes out, but when competition comes out, these numbers are going to come crashing down. It's going to be, you know, it's eventually going to get cheaper as competition filters into this arena. But if we're a little over time, so I want to hit a few more things here. But if anyone's got more points to raise about this, real quick.
Yeah. Well, all it is about the price. It was raised from 7 to 8K in anticipation of more features. And now that they're here, they're raising it to 10. But I'm not here to stop someone from selling something for whatever they want. People will buy it at 10K. I think it's fine. Will I buy it for 10K? Only if they let me transfer it to another vehicle. That's the thing.
Right.
I just want it to my account, not to my car.
Would you want to try it first? Because it seems that they have unleashed something to a bunch of influencers. 24 hours later, Elon's said, right, get your wallets out. You got till Monday. And then under a bit of pushback or for whatever reason, you got till Thursday. But like, I don't know. I'm not saying that I don't make purchasing decisions like everybody else. You know, like you buy stuff online sometimes and you didn't think it fully through. But that might be £50 or £100. Like, I can't get my head around spending £10,000 on something which I've never tried and I can't try. Like, they have taken away, there used to be a trial period, right? Uh-huh. I don't know, I'm not a Tesla owner, but couldn't you try it for like a week or a month before
depending
you paid?
Depending on the time of the, if they ran that program, if they wanted to sell numbers. But you're absolutely right, Martin. The thing is, you're logical. Most people are not, and they're just not the best.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, think about all the people that leased a car in 2016 with full self-driving, returned it on the lease, and got zero benefit for that extra added package.
Yeah, full self-driving is not factored into the trade-in price at all. So that is simply money that you are loaning or you've given to a company that you want to support, that you believe in. There's absolutely no financial reason, reason why you should have bought this years ago.
And we don't yet know how the subscription service is going to pan out, because if it's an attractive system, why would anybody pay, you know, it's 10,000 now. When they roll it out and it's polished and everybody can get it, you know, the price will go up even further. Why would anybody pay for that if Tesla makes an attract, unless they're going to just use the car all the time as like a robotaxi? Why would anybody pay for that? Now, the funny thing about it is this subscription service, I had said for ages that Tesla wouldn't do this, even though people said that they were eventually going to, for that single reason, because I didn't understand why Tesla would roll that out, because it would cannibalize the sale of Autopilot. Like, why would anybody pay that $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, whatever it's going to be, when it's really fully ready and offering it to everybody? So, but I was wrong on that 100%, and they're rolling something out, but we don't know the details yet. You know, it's great. I think it's a great offering, but it's a little perplexing why Tesla would do that and then think people will still buy Autopilot.
If I could get it for a month when I'm doing some road trips over summer holidays for $100, $200, like, yeah, I'll do that, because then I haven't got to spend 10 grand.
Me too.
But is there going to be a minimum? There's got to be a minimum subscription to it, like 3 or 6 months. But if it's monthly, like Elon tweeted last night, FSD monthly rental will be available sometime next year. It cannot be by the month, because nobody would then pay. And everyone who has paid would be like...
would be really pissed.
Like, what did I do? Yeah. What did I do? Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I'd love it to be monthly, because that's what I would do. I would then just take it for the months of the year when I'm doing road trips. Mm-hmm. And then, especially in a post-COVID world where we're all traveling, in theory, a bit less, there's no reason to be out of pocket.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't think that they were going to do it. So I'm glad to see that they are going to offer a product like that. But I'm surprised at the same time. If it is just monthly, I mean, I think that's absolutely fantastic, you know, and I could absolutely see myself doing it when I go on long road trips, or just to show off to my friends every now and then.
Right. All right. So are we ready to move on real quick? Just want to hit a couple of things before we end. So this is kind of a big deal. General Motors, its largest factory in North America is a Spring Hill facility in Tennessee, and they're investing $2 billion in renovations to convert some of that to EV manufacturing. It will continue to build the gas-powered Cadillac XT5 and XT6, but it makes the Acadia as well, and that will be shifted to Lansing, Michigan. And so, yeah, GM continues to invest a lot of money, and, you know, man, I'm not sure. And people still have a hard time believing that they're, you know, serious about electrification, but, man, they are serious about electrification. It's coming, it's happening. And I don't know if anyone has anything to say about that, but if not, I can move on. It's another thing. Okay. So $53,990. That's the price of the XC40 Recharge P8 from Volvo. There it is there, looking black and beautiful. It looks good. It's nice. I love seeing these things. There's gas-powered versions of these on the road, and it's a big seller actually for them. And they look great. So with destination charges added and the federal tax credit subtracted, because if you're paying over $50,000 for a car, you're probably going to get that kind of tax credit back or close to it. So that would be $47,485, which is a little below, I believe, the Tesla Model Y long range. Kyle, what do you think of this price? Because I know you were interested in this.
Yeah, I think it's priced very well. I have no issues with it. It's a premium car priced at a relatively premium price. Keep in mind, small. It's not XC60 size. It's still the entry-level Volvo SUV. I think, you know, in Colorado, this car is $43,000 or $44,000 base price. I think we optioned ours up a bit the way that we're going to spec it in that sage green with, you know, the driver assist and stuff. And it turned out to be just under $50,000 after the tax credits are factored in. Colorado gets an extra $4,000 point of sale credit, which is very nice. Similar to Jersey, gets a $5,000 credit. It's a great car. No issues. I think the range will turn out to be a non-issue as well. I think we'll see it perform quite well in our tests on the highway. And yeah, we initially loving this car. Can't wait to drive it. Can't wait to see it more. I've spent, again, some time in person with it, with the Google UI. It's very good. And I think there's so many people my age, friends my age, that are not car people that love this car. I know of three or four individual people that are, again, my age in their mid to late 20s, and they're like waiting for this to come out, and this is going to be their first EV just because it fits the stylish nature. It's premium, but it's not pretentious.
I want to add my two cents. So Kyle talked about New Jersey rebate, and this actually will qualify for it. It just qualifies. We have a $55,000 cap, and with the $995 destination charge, the base price on it is $54,985. So it clears it by $15. However, then you can't get any options, not even the $100 lava carpet option, whatever that is. And in New Jersey, we have no sales tax on BEVs. So I could literally drive out of the showroom with a cost of under $43,000. Without even negotiating off the MSRP. So, you know, there's a good chance if you didn't get any options here in New Jersey, you could drive one of these home for like 41 or 42,000 total, which is a fantastic deal for that vehicle.
Yeah. And if you can afford to get the, I don't know if you can see how much it costs, but the stereo upgrade option, the Harman, I believe it's a Harman Kardon system.
Yep. Like if that speakers, Harman, that Harman Kardon system costs $5,800 in New Jersey.
That's right. but you know, the thing is, it's just the HK system. Volvo has a Bowers and Wilkins system in their 60 and 90 series chassis cars. And those are incredible. Well, you know, we're in the process of looking for a V60 plug-in hybrid right now, a Polestar. And thankfully, they all come specced with Bowers and Wilkins. And it has to be one of the best systems. I've listened to B&Os and BMWs. I've listened to the Mercedes high-end ones. I've listened to Lexus. Mark Levinson stuff. This is the best sound systems in any new cars. You know, it comes at a price like a $4,000 option, but totally worth it.
Right. Okay. So let's move on real quick. We're way over time. So Nio's flagship sedan is teased. It's called the EE7. It was teased on its mobile app. You can see it on Inside EVs. Maybe we can pull up a picture of it real quick. But it looks pretty good. It's like the Neo design language in sedan form, basically. And it's probably going to be a really good high performance. And that only goes on sale in 2022. So we'll have lots of time to talk about that coming up. This is also really kind of neat. This week I learned that the Tesla is exporting made in China Model 3s to over 10 countries in Europe. It's just kind of never expected that, because originally, the made in China Model 3s were for the Chinese market and possibly like surrounding areas like, Australia or Japan or, other, places in that region. But, I'm not sure why it's in Europe, but it is. And we'll keep our eye on that and see if we can find out more about it. And also this morning we found out that, sticking with China, that the Model S has been recalled in China. 29,193 units of Model S and Model X's produced between September 17th, 2013 and August 16th, 2017. Tesla will replace the rear linkages of the left and right front suspension and the upper linkages of the left and rear suspension. So that's kind of interesting. And we'll see how that shakes out over here, because people have talked about there's been some suspension breakages. I'm not sure if it's the exact same parts here that are involved, but that's something that was just breaking this morning that I wanted to bring up, and we'll look into it, and there'll be more about that on Inside EVs or maybe here next week. So that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section below if you're watching us on YouTube, or on the Inside EVs podcast thread. Now, don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. You can see it on the screen here. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. There you see it. And I'm Dominic_Y. And you click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Ciao.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.